This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Oh no, an error's recurred. Wait a moment and try again.
I'll several errors recurred it. Yesterday, to be fair.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Green and White, brought to you by Argyle Life. While we wait for you all to pile in, yep, you Stokies too, just a customary plea to get you to like, comment, and subscribe. And if you're listening back to this on your podcast platforms tomorrow, you can leave us a little 5-star review. That'd be appreciated immensely. I can't imagine we'll be getting many of those from Staffordshire. Well, the apprentice defeats the master. A 3-0 win for Steven Schumacher's Stoke City sees them back in contention for the European places, like the massive club they truly are. 2,600 greens turned up in the away end, but the 11 we needed to perform on the pitch couldn't muster much as the Potters celebrated their big day out by half-filling their stadium. Am I being disingenuous for nibbles in the comments? Absolutely. Joining me tonight to dissect that awful display is Sam Down. How's things?
Very good, thank you, apart from yesterday.
Yeah, quite. Finlay Allen?
Yeah, probably slightly better given that I didn't go yesterday. So I didn't have to endure that for the whole 90 minutes. So that was okay. But yeah, not a great result. But other than that, I'm all right.
Yeah, lucky man. And I quote here, John, the floppy head prick who has Stoke City Twitter all over our mentions. John Allsop, how's things?
Evening, Karen, Aaron.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. Not entirely funny. Sam, you were among the 2,600 at the Bet365 yesterday. Why don't you give us your match run through?
Oh dear. That's about my match run through. It was an absolutely shocking performance. From pretty much start almost to finish, we had a 10-minute spell in the first half where we looked like a half-capable team, but apart from that, we were diabolical. I think for all that we moaned about Ian Foster, and quite rightly moaned about Ian Foster, we didn't, away from home, I don't think we put in a performance as bad as that under Foster, in all truth. I'm not going to say it was the worst performance of the season, because the West Brom game was the worst performance of the season at home. In fact, the West Brom home game was one of the worst performances of all time. But I think in terms of away games, that was the worst performance of the season.
Was Bristol City away? Bristol City erasure. People, I don't understand how people have forgotten how bad we were. It was literally like less than a year ago. We were awful. Awful. Anyway, sorry.
Bristol City, we were poor, but we played a reserve team. And even then, we had about three or four clear-cut chances, which we didn't have at all yesterday. But let's just say, repeat what I said in my tweet full-time. Stoke City played the game. Plymouth Argyle played the occasion. And that difference was the difference between the two teams. We were appalling in the game. We were, I think, looked like rabbits in the headlights. We were too, everyone was too keen to have a Hollywood moment. The passing, the use of the ball was dreadful. Nobody was just playing the simple ball. How often do you, I love some of your comments. You really do make this show what it is. Some of the passing was dreadful. Which is often when you're losing, when you're behind in a game, when you're not playing well, you just want somebody who's just going to play, just keep the ball for 2 or 3 minutes. Just play the simple ball, build up possession, try and get a bit of control in the game back. Everyone was trying to play the Hollywood ball, which was never actually working. I think I think Adam Randalls must have had the curse of being on our merchandise with the performance he put in yesterday. It wasn't his finest game. I think we need to get some merchandise made up for some of the Millwall players, if that's the effect it had on Randall.
I've always wanted a Murray Wallace baseball cap, and just in time for summer as well. So Aaron, if you could get on that, that'd be great.
And that's not the pick on him too much, because whilst he was one of the worst performers, nobody was really very good apart from Mike Cooper in goal. And actually, Alfie Devine, after half-time, who's copped a lot of stick from our fans recently, but the second half, he was the only player driving forward with the ball, only player trying to make something happen, only player with he also played Hollywood passes, but at least one or two of them actually worked. So yeah, it was a dismal, dismal performance. I think everybody just came out there with the pressure of Schumacher, the pressure of we want to prove him wrong, we want to get him sucked into the relegation fight without any sort of composure or calmness to play the game. And so often with Argyle, when we have these big occasion games, it all goes belly up. And I'm annoyed with myself, but I allowed myself to think that we could capitalise on that Leicester. It's the most same old Argyle thing I think I've ever seen, to have such a good performance, such a good win. And if we'd have gone there and lost narrowly, that would have been, it wouldn't have been okay, but it would have been understandable. It would have been, fair enough. We've gone there, we've lost narrowly to a very good manager and a side with, despite their league position, a lot of talent in their side. I forgot his name. The Korean lad was fantastic for them yesterday. Milian Manhoef was also fantastic for them. And Luke Condal, credit where due, was very good for them yesterday. They showed a lot of quality.
Is the Korean player not called Jun Ho, or am I getting... Is that another player they have?
It was the attacking midfielder, anyway, who played for them yesterday. And, it was they were good, but anyway, I'm going off my point. Going back to my main point, if we'd have gone there, put in a good fighting performance and lost narrowly, I would have said, you know what, it's not great, but whatever. We've had such a good run, but to then follow up our one of the most amazing home park nights when everyone was bouncing, celebrating, cheering, the feeling of unity around the club, to then go in and put in one of our worst performances in many years. It's just so Argyle, it hurts, really. And it's just painful to have to watch that game. Bobby Madley put it, he wasn't the reason we lost, let's have that right away, but Bobby Madley put in one of the worst before. How Bobby Madley even became a Premier League referee is beyond my comprehension. The management of that game was appalling.
I like to add how he's still able to referee at a professional level after what...
Well, yes. Yes, his controversy of what he said, it's pretty well documented. But on pure merit alone, I think he's got to be looking at being demoted as a referee after how poorly he... I've never seen him have a good game refereeing us. I just want to know, there's always names like Trevor Kettle, Mark Calburn was the famous one. That's one for the older listeners. When I was a kid, there's always names that when you see them referee and you think, oh no. And Bobby Madley's one of them. He's an appalling ref, but that doesn't take away from how bad we were in the game. I did not have a very good day yesterday. Well, I had a good day you know, in the pub and coming home, but I didn't have a good day in the ground at all. It was poor performance, poor refereeing, and then the Sheffield Wednesday result today has just put the, you know, put the cherry on the cake, really. It's been a pretty dismal weekend for us. And
well, the yeah. pear on the cake, really, you could say.
Yes, indeed. Ainsley pears, of course, with that dreadful error for the third goal. One more win will do it. Two more draws will quite possibly do it. But we need to play a lot better than that to get the results we need.
Yeah, Sam, as always, exceptionally well done. Ticked off pretty much every fucking talk. Sorry, again. Don't know why I'm doing that again. Every talking point of the week.
Aaron can't control his language this weekend.
I can't. Brilliant. John, why don't you give them what they really want, what they're here for? How did you sum up that game and their reaction post-match?
Well, look, I did try to warn you that this would happen.
I clipped it up too, but it just didn't get as many views. Carry on.
No, I meant try to warn you about the game. I don't understand what the fuss is about, really. It's very sincere in what I said. I agree that we were very poor yesterday. I think particularly in the second half. I don't think we were quite as bad in the first half as some have made out. That's not to say I thought we played particularly well in the first half. But I don't think there was a huge amount in the game until I think it was Hoover hit the bar with that kind of raking cross shot. And I can't exactly remember. There was also an incident involving Cooper and Mumba and him. I think it might have been the aftermath of that shot, actually, but it was around that time. I actually didn't see that, because I think I just sort of looked the wrong way, and then suddenly there was a brawl and I wasn't exactly sure how it started. But so I've seen some people sort of attribute our sort of head loss at the end of the first half to that, which I think would probably be there's probably something in that, and it probably speaks to Sam's point about playing the occasion not the game. But that being said, in the first half, you know, I didn't think there was an awful lot between the teams until that kind of last 5 to 10 minutes of the half. You know, we didn't create a ton of chances, but we had got the ball in some good areas, had some free kicks in dangerous areas. Whittaker, you know, with a superb strike that was probably a bit too central to really be, to really have a good chance of going in. You probably expect the keeper to save it, but it was a great strike nonetheless, and a good save, a competent save. Obviously those two goals have just been, you know, a 1-2 punch, right? And we went down on the mat and we didn't get up in the second half. And obviously that part of it is really, really disappointing. But I think going in at 2-0 down was not a fair reflection of the game to that point. And I think it was very much what happens when you play against a Steven Schumacher side, right? I mean, how many times have we seen us do that to other teams under him? You know, two quick fire goals, two real moments of attacking quality in an otherwise kind of cagey affair. I mean, we did that to Sunderland arguably earlier in the season under Schumacher. We sort of did it on a much grander scale against Norwich as well. From there, it was obviously going to be a very, very difficult task. And then the second half, we, like I said, we didn't get up off the mat after being punched twice in the face. I think that's really, really disappointing, because I do think, you know, that they were quite an open side. I think they, you know, there was an opportunity to try and get in behind them, and we just didn't really force any issue at all. We looked tired. We looked, I don't want to say disinterested, because I think it's a bit offensive to the players to suggest that they didn't want to win the game, but the morale was clearly just not good. Every bit as united and superb as we were against Leicester the previous week, we looked kind of disunited and poor yesterday. So really, really disappointing second half. But I do think as we have experienced over the years, shooey ball is kind of a risky way of playing football. Sometimes you'll be 2-0 up at half time because you take those attacking risks, and sometimes you'll get caught on the counter attack, or someone will get in behind you and score. And I think, to be honest with you, it sort of felt like it could have gone either of those two ways in the first half. Obviously, they then turned the screw, and in the second half, they managed the game really well. So obviously, have to give them credit for that. Kundal looked like a man possessed, and had, you know, I think, a really good game, a game that our fans would probably recognise, as being the sort of game he has more than Stoke fans by all accounts. But look, you know, I think. Obviously, it hurts a lot given the identity of the Stoke manager and the kind of needle between the two clubs recently. But you know, I'm not going to hugely overreact to it. I think if you'd offered me 7 points from the four games, you know, from Rotherham under Jusnip and Nanskeville, I'd have absolutely eaten your hand off for that, and then probably thrown your hand on the floor and wondered why I wasn't allowed to bring it into the ground. Yes, I think, you know, every single one of us, I think probably that's true for, right? I mean, after Bristol City, we looked out for the count. We looked done. We looked absolutely finished. So to get 7 points from those four games is, I think, really, really encouraging. You know, obviously, I don't think anyone would have foreseen 3 points coming against Leicester. And I'm sure a lot of people would have really liked the 3 points to come yesterday, but that's football. And that's why I'm not going to be too disheartened going into the final two games. We're still in a great position. We're above the drop zone. There are loads of other teams, you know, in and around us who have to go and get results. And, you know, unlike under Ian Foster, I mean, Sam sort of talked about this being a sort of more, you know, a worse performance than we had under Foster. But I think the problem with Foster wasn't necessarily the, you know, odd bad performance. It was the fact that it was a bad performance week after week after week after week that was tactically self-inflicted a lot of the time. Obviously, we're not getting that, you know, under Jusnip and Nanskeville. So, yeah, a very disappointing day, obviously. But, you know, a day I'll be able to obviously, you know, mark in the annals of my life and tell my kids about. And yeah.
Brilliant.
That's basically my assessment of it.
Brilliant. I do absolutely love people that comment on a podcast saying that people talk too much. It is one of my favourite things. If you've come for visual reasons, I'm sorry, because you've got us four. nobody ever wants that on their TV. Some full-time thoughts then. Aaron Press says, I don't think we need to overreact. Yesterday we came up against a team with a manager that knows our players' strengths and weaknesses inside out. They quickly nullified us. How many times do we see a major high and then a major low straight after? Don't panic. We'll be okay. I think we've already touched on the Bristol City game, but obviously the game after that was the 6-2 win over... 6-2? Yeah, 6-2 win over Norwich City. You know, maybe we get a similar reaction. Millwall, we'll talk about Millwall in a bit. Matt Lee of Staffordshire. The turning point was the skirmish in the first half. Their crowd got into it. And then when we were having the better of it, after that, they won every single 50-50. And the only moments of quality, the ref seemed to officiate through red-tinted lenses. But that wasn't the reason we lost. Jack Jones, embarrassing result, never looked in it. And the pressure that we had was never enough. Rhubarb, a bit of a reality check after last week, shows the scale of the job required for an incoming coach. And Ryan, the emotion of the occasion got to us, unsurprising and expected. 1 point should still be enough. I had a question for Finn, but he's disappeared. So, oh, there he is. Hello. Finn, 2,600 in the away end. Why is it that we never turn up on the big occasions? It's almost like if we take 100 away somewhere on a cold and wet Tuesday night, we get a big win. But when we're backed in numbers, never seems to show up.
Yeah, it's kind of the age-old question, isn't it? I mean, I don't think it would be fair to say Fletcher, like talk about Fletcher or Sheridan, because generally our teams weren't that good under them. But when we had better sides in for League Two and decent sides in League One, I remember going to Charlton away at the end of the 2016-17 season, was it? Lost 2-0 and we were 1-0 down. 1-0 down within 2 minutes, bought 3,000 fans, sold out the place, never turned up.
I would just say very quickly that our first away win this season was at Swansea with a packed out away end, very similar following to yesterday, and we won that game in a great atmosphere. So I don't think this narrative is entirely true. But anyway,
there wasn't really any narrative. I don't really know what the, you know, I don't know what.
Oh,
the thing
from Aaron, not from you, to be clear.
But generally, I think. Yeah, generally, I don't really know. It's just a very Argyle thing to follow up a great performance with a performance as bad as that. Having said that, and I know that somebody might have mentioned it in the comments earlier, I think that really it could... I'm not saying I 100% agree with this take, but there's definitely some substance to it. I think we were just outwitted by a manager who we know is very good, very capable championship manager, because he had us basically mid-table until he left with a side that is shouldn't be nowhere near mid-table on personnel. And he knows everything about our side. And Juicenip said in the post-match press conference, that basically they outwitted us tactically in the first half. And then we kind of shored up a bit more in the second half. Yes, okay, they had the majority of the game still, but I think really it's kind of an obvious me saying this, but those two goals before half time just killed any momentum, any hope that we had of getting anything out of that game. I know I've gone on a bit of a tangent, but I think it's probably a case of, I'm not sure about the wider question of away games, not sure why that is, but generally, I think we were just probably a bit too fired up for yesterday. And now, obviously, I think 6, 7, 8 games ago, whatever it is now since Foster left, Joe Edwards said about this being a mini season. Well, this is a setback in our mini season, and we've got 2 games now. So, you know, it's a very footballer cliche, but we need to take one game at a time, because if we win the next game, we don't need to worry about Hull. We don't need to worry about Hull until we play Millwall. Do you know what I mean? So I think that's what we need to do now. And I think similar to what Sam said, we kind of played the occasion more than the opposition yesterday.
To Finn's point about this mini league idea, in that time we've had 1 unbelievable performance, 2 like kind of you could probably debate how good they were, but at worst fine and at best good performances, and 1 absolutely terrible performance. Rather than having bad performance, bad performance, bad performance, bad performance, so like that indicates to me that it's probably unlikely we'll have 2 absolutely terrible performances in the last 2 games. Could that happen? Yes, of course it could. But like, it seems like we've gone back to a much more kind of law of averages thing, which we had earlier in the season under Schumacher, more than the everything is absolutely terrible vibes of the late Foster era to me. And yeah, I think a lot of the reaction I've seen has kind of fit more into the latter vibe than the former. I don't think it's an equivalent point in the season for us. And so, yeah, I think people understand why people are hurting so much, but I think some patience is kind of called for. If we're that bad again next week, I think, yeah, maybe it's time to panic, but still two big games to go.
A lot of the reaction I've seen, John, has been calling you silly names, like somebody in the comments calling you David Cameron, which I do enjoy, but the rest of their comment I'm not going to put on screen. Nearly got on there, nearly accidentally clicked that. Sam, you sort of already mentioned it on your in your match run through, but is this like a Goldilocks type situation in which that we were either too hyped or not hyped enough and Stoke had it just right?
Yeah, I absolutely do think that. I think the first 20-25, we were very nervous indeed. We had a 10-minute and we just didn't get a lot going, didn't really push forward, sat quite deep. We had a 10-minute spell, which was the best 10-minute spell of the game, where we just looked like we were settling into it a little bit. Still didn't really make anything clear-cut, still didn't have a clear sighted goal, but we were getting in the right areas. I think we got, you know, got the ball into the box a few times better. Then the incident with 2 incidents. There was the incident where one of their players went down with a completely fake head injury, which then was apparently not so bad that, that the referee would stop play when Stoke were attacking. But then when Argar broke away on the counter, that even though the ball was at the other end of the pitch, the injury was so bad that the play had to be stopped. Bobby Madley all over. Then there was the incident with Cooper and goodness me, who was it? Campbell? The Stoke player
who had Cooper personally, but I didn't get a great.
No, because it was one, and then hang on, let me just quickly check who got booked in that game, because it was 2 of them, because it was Cooper and Hoover, and then I think someone else, yeah, Tyrese Campbell was the other one who got involved in the scrap. So Look, that was, sorry, Manhoef, Campbell and Cooper were the three involved, yes, not Hoover. So, yeah, the incident there with Cooper and Manhoef that then Campbell waded into and Mumba waded into also from our side. Yes, look, there was a bit of a scuffle. Cooper did seem to instigate it, you know, just no need, just bring it in, be calm. But then Campbell then grabs Cooper pretty much by the throat, which, you know, to me, I've seen reds given for that, in all honesty. I genuinely have. I'm not saying it necessarily should have been a red, but anyway, it happened. After that incident, our heads went completely. I think every player, because everyone waded in, like they do when these you know, scraps happen. Every player waded in. I think at that time, our heads completely went. We pushed higher up the pitch, leaving a lot of, which, you know, isn't necessarily a bad thing, but we left so much space in behind. We didn't react well. I think everyone was that pent up. Everyone's heads were so hot. We then were appalling then after that till halftime. Ball went across the face of goal and clipped the post. So we were lucky not to be 1-0 up before we were 1-0 down, rather. And then the goals come. And at that point, 2-0 down away from home. Very, very difficult to ever get anything from the game at that point. You know, the old cliche goes that 2-0 is the most dangerous score in football. But I think the statistics actually show that if a team is 2-0 up, they win kind of 90 to 95% of the time. And I think at home, that's even more so. So yeah, I think absolutely the heads went wrong place mentally. And then the second half was just diabolical, absolutely diabolical. And we didn't get ourselves in the right headspace for that game at all. Like I say, Stoke played it pretty much perfectly.
Okay, nice. John, another quiet display from Mr. Whittaker and Mr. Hardy. How do we attempt to get them in the game a little bit more? Obviously, got a question here as well from Nick Oliver along the same signs. Has Whittaker already agreed a deal somewhere else for the last 3-4 games? He's avoided tackles, chasing anything down, and getting too involved. Is he trying to avoid injury? I'm not entirely sure on that one, but.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, about his future. My suspicion is that he's off in the summer. I would never for 1 minute question the bloke's character and commitment. I think all of the indications are that he loves this football club and is very grateful to us for the chance that we've given him to build his career. So I would strongly push back on the idea that he is, you know, not trying or not interested. Yeah, of course, when transfer windows, you know, approach, I imagine, not having ever played professional football myself, but I imagine that it might sort of subconsciously be in the back of your mind that you don't want to get an injury. So you know, I'm not going to say there's nothing in that take at all, but I'm sure it's like not in any way conscious. I have no question marks over his character in that sense. I also think it's important to note that Whittaker's not really ever been a great off the ball player. That's never really been his strength. And I just wonder now if people are sort of noticing that more because he isn't doing as much with the ball. You know, it's very easy to kind of ignore the fact that he's not kind of the most disciplined pressing player in the world when he's, you know, slamming a 25-yard shot into the bottom corner.
It's a lot easier to mark him out of games as well, isn't it?
It's also a lot easier to mark him out of games than it used to be. I think personally a big factor in this, and obviously one that's affected our season just generally, is the loss of Finn Azaz in January. Because I think with Azaz and Whittaker, there were two main danger men, and teams kind of would always be, you know, kind of stretched between trying to mark the two of them or trying to handle the two of them. When your main focal point in that kind of attacking midfield area is one player, it becomes much, much easier if you're not, you know, if you're less confident that, more confident that, you know, the other number 10 isn't going to do something, you know, or pull out kind of an outrageous Finn Azaz piece of technique or a goal out of nothing. It becomes much easier to devote resources to marking the kind of main focal point threat out of the game. And I think he's, you know, teams have had his number in the second half of the season. So I don't think it's really his fault that, you know, teams have just learned to stop giving him that little bit of space to cut in and be able to have a shot from 25 yards. And he still, you know, he still gets some types of shot off, you know, that are like that. He had a pretty good shot yesterday, as I mentioned earlier, which the keeper tipped over the bar, get a bit more direction on that. And you know, that could have been a sort of classic Whittaker screamer. So, I think to bring Hardy into it, obviously, because the question was about him too. I think Hardy looks exhausted, which is totally understandable, given that we failed in both transfer windows to sign, with due respect to Ben Wayne, a kind of reliable backup starting goal scorer at this level. This is not to be harsh on Wayne, because I think Wayne has some qualities, but I don't think he's a, I think we can all agree probably on this pod that he's not a starting quality championship striker. So we've only had one of those, and they're at the end of, you know, a 46 game plus season. It's no surprise that Hardy is running to the ground. And Ditto Whittaker, who I believe has been ever present for us, you know, didn't start at Bristol City.
Well, at the end of the day, I think there's a widespread acceptance that Hardy's drop off in performance due to tiredness. Why isn't Whittaker afforded that same good faith? Because Whittaker has played 1,000 more minutes than Hardy this season. That's not to say Hardy isn't tired. I agree, he absolutely is. But he missed two quite prolonged spells. He had the spell after his sort of groin injury that made him miss, I think, quite a bit of November that he picked up in the Ipswich game. And then I think in his second game back after that injury, he got that awful concussion at home to Rotherham, which then I think that made him miss another sort of 2 weeks. So actually, and I think he's had a couple of games he's been brought off, which Whittaker hasn't had so much. So Whittaker played a lot more minutes than Hardy, by the way. So if tiredness is an excuse for Hardy, and I agree it's a valid excuse for him, it is one for Whittaker as well. Look, we can all talk about, oh, you know, he's not trying because he's got his mind elsewhere. And look, I'm not going to say that subliminally, subconsciously, that isn't a factor at all. But I really don't think it's the main factor. I suppose the advantage of Ryan Hardy's form here is that it means he's more likely to still be here next season, because I think it's going to make a few clubs think twice about putting in a bid for him on his current form, in all honesty. But then we all know that Hardy is a player who has incredible runs of good form and runs of quite poor form. So you know what? As long as we stay up, obviously it's not going to be worth it if we go down, but it's almost, I guess, worth him having this if it means he is actually still going to be here next season. I think he's running on empty, as David says there in the comments. I think that he's not getting as good service, because let's have it right. Although we were absolutely fantastic against Leicester, it was still a smash and grab. We didn't really get our attacking players on the ball after going 1-0 up very much, which is fine. We were playing Leicester. But that's still, you know, ultimately, the excuses for Hardy and Whittaker under Foster of we were playing defensively, we didn't get them on the ball enough, are still true to some extent, because we are still playing quite defensively. Leicester, very well defensively. Yesterday, very badly defensively. But in both of those games, we didn't get our attacking players on the ball much, which is going to have an impact on them. You know, it's all very well having a go at them both, but when they're not getting any kind of, you know, good crosses being whipped in from out wide, when they're not getting good play through the middle, it's going to be difficult for the both of them. Absolutely, you know, can't put it all.
Quickly, I completely agree with that. I think it's a combination of tiredness, change of system, lack of service, players, other teams, managers and players getting wise to marking them out of games. What it is absolutely clearly not due to is a lack of effort or commitment or anything of that description. I just think it's, and some of the commentary I've seen around those two on social media today has been nothing short of ridiculous. And I personally didn't hear any, but I'm led to understand there were people in the ground, you know, booing them and heckling them for large portions of the game.
It should only be you that's getting ridiculous comments strewn around social media, shouldn't it, John?
Yeah, well, Aaron, I'm obviously talking about things that happened in the ground, and I wouldn't obviously expect you to have any input on that. But So I heard they were getting heckled inside the ground. Obviously, seen some of that on social media. It's absurd. It's absolutely disgraceful, honestly. I mean, these guys have played, really just run their socks off, given absolutely everything to the cause all season. The pair of them have contributed so many goals and goal creations between them that, you know, I obviously dread to think what position we'd be in if we didn't have either of them and they hadn't played in this way. If you'd gone back in time to early August and said that you would get that much out of those two players, you know, one of whom I think people, including me, had some possible question marks about as a championship player, another one who we just signed in a very kind of high pressure for us big money deal. You'd have looked at it and gone, that's an absolutely superb effort. Wow, I can't believe those two players contributed so much. And, you know, just because that contribution is kind of more front loaded and just because they're looking tired and leggy now doesn't mean they deserve a load of abuse all of a sudden. I think we are enormously lucky to have those players And while I probably actually am not really, you know, in the mood to question any of the players after yesterday, my view is it was pretty much just a bad performance. If you're going to be looking at asking questions, it has to be other players who haven't stepped up to the equivalent level to take the pressure off those two, rather than just asking questions of those two themselves. I think some of our fans need to get their heads out of their asses about those two players, and to be completely honest.
Although I will criticise Whittaker for that corner. Sorry, that was one of the worst corners I've ever seen in football ever. What on earth was he doing? But yeah, anyway, go on, Finn. We've both talked about.
That's right. Just very quickly, on Whittaker, I think, look, he's always had that in his game. And I think if you'd said to us, oh, we're going to sign him, I think the season that he's had, which is basically a 20-goal season, because I do believe he will score one goal in these next two games in the Championship, I think that would have exceeded our expectations, even if we thought he could step up to this level. I mean, you know, 20 goals for a winger in the Championship for a team that isn't very good at this level is a no mean feat whatsoever. But I would also say that this season and last season, there were many poor performances that he had that he just masked with moments of brilliance. And then when he assists or scores, you can't complain. Unfortunately, when he doesn't score and when he doesn't assist, and every player goes through bad runs of form, no matter who they are, his deficiencies off the ball get highlighted more. And if, in all honesty, if there's one thing that's stopping the guy from playing at a sort of top Premier League level, it's his work off the ball. But we have allowed that to be the case because he is so capable of moments of brilliance. So I think we've kind of got mixed up a bit. You know, last season before January, we must remember that there was literally a couple of months before January where he really just seemed to score every game. But at the start of the season, it wasn't until October that he was regularly in a League One side. So
yeah, Finn, I don't know what you're talking about here, because I was famously a very big fan of Morgan Whittaker from the minute he first pulled on the Argyle shirt at the beginning of that season, as Sam will attest.
But yeah,
I famously wasn't. So
I think yeah. So, well, exactly. So I think, you know, his form has been so brilliant in terms of goals and assists at times this season. We've kind of forgotten about that. The guy is playing his first year at, like, in the Championship in terms of games. He's only 23 years of age. You know, the guy's he's a brilliant player. And, you know, we've said at times this season, oh, we're not going to mention Morgan Whittaker because it just gets boring, because how good, like, we just say every week, oh, isn't he great? But, you know, he's still got a lot to work on, like, in his game. And all of a sudden now, because he isn't scoring and he isn't assisting, it's like, oh, he's you know, not trying hard enough. No, it's just part of his, like, he's just not a very good off the ball player. That is a fact, you know? I think he needs to be cut a little bit of slack, I think, from lots of our fans.
I don't want to sound like a certain other podcast too much, but you know, if you score a lot of low XG chances in the first half of the season, the odds are that you probably won't in the second half of the season. And so, like, really, you could argue this is just kind of statistical variation that we're seeing.
What podcast could you possibly mean? Because I'm pretty sure they're not in my top most 20 listened to podcasts, whoever they are.
No, to be fair, once you've got through the rest is podcast stable, you don't really have much room for anything else, do you, Sam, in your listening habits? So
you got it, yeah.
We all know you love Rory Stewart.
On obviously Whittaker and Hardy's performance, a lot of people in the comments saying about how there's just that lack of creativity in midfield. It's just obviously yesterday, Sam, just that Hardy, not Hardy, that's not his name, Adam Randall, Jordan Houghton midfield too, just it just lacks all creativity, doesn't it? There's just no real spark there.
Yesterday it did, yeah, but Adam Randall's had some games where he's been fantastic creatively throughout the season. I think that Randall has had a very funny season. I do. I think he's, because he has had some games, like the Leicester game. The one I always mention that I keep coming back to as one of the best individual performances of all season is the Watford one on New Year's Day, where he absolutely ran the game from the middle of the park and pretty much barely put a foot wrong all game. But he is a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde. He does have some absolutely dreadful games, which, again, like I said in my intro, I don't want to pick on him too much, because apart from Cooper and Devine, I don't think any of them come out of that game with much credit. But I do think that he's... We talk about Hardy being a confidence player in terms of, like, prolonged runs of form. I think Randall is a confidence player in-game, because I've seen games where he's been brilliant and he makes a mistake, and then his head sort of drops a bit, and he thinks he's got to pull out a miraculous pass to make up for it. And then if that pass goes belly up, he just, you know, compounds it. And I think he can get into a bit of a negative spiral. And look, he was fantastic. He got awarded the man of the match, Leicester home, by the sponsors. He had a fantastic game, and he has had a lot of fantastic games this season. But I think that this level of consistency, or lack of consistency we're seeing from him, does need to be worked on, because he sometimes just, more than anyone, just needs to do what he's good at and play the simple pass a bit, which I think if he does that a little bit more, I mean, look, and I'm sure he'll be listening to what the coaches are saying to him, and, you know, I'm sure they've got a much better idea than me, but if I were Neil Dewsip or Kevin Lamstel, I'd have just been saying to him, just keep the ball. Don't try and spray it out wide 20 yards or try and thread it through. Just play a simple pass. Just play to the man in space and get your confidence back up. Because that was what we were badly, badly lacking. And I don't want to say Adam Ramsey's got no creativity, because I think there have been some games where he's been brilliant, but he does just need to work on his performance level a bit. Because it's all very well having an 8 out of 10 game and then a 2 out of 10 game. It's better just to have 6-7, 6-7, you know? Because that will get us more points.
Yeah, before we jump into some of the social questions, just a Jana has asked, does Dewsnip not like Sorinola? We know who Sorinola doesn't like. Thanks for that. It's a bit of content.
He's injured. He's injured now, I think. Sorinola, was that not mentioned in one of the press conferences that he's got a knock? No, I'm sure I saw that. Maybe I'm wrong.
It was only Miller that was injured for the weekend.
Well, okay, well, fair enough. Yeah, fair enough.
We know his thumbs aren't injured. We know that much. Finn, I'll come to you. If these results were reversed, I think John's touched on it a little bit. Well, one of them did. They talk a lot. To tend to zone out. If these results were reversed, you know, if we managed to get a win over Stoke and a loss to Leicester, are we any happier? Or is it just by the bye that we'd still be in the same position?
Subliminally, yeah, because, like, obviously it's like, oh, we beat Schumacher, and, you know, that would have been that everyone would have loved that yesterday, right? I'm sure Stoke fans are absolutely loving that we wanted to beat Schumacher so much, and they ran all over us.
We'll
and
hopefully
they finally realize just what a good manager they've got on their hands, and it's the disgrace of a boardroom that they've got, which is why they're in this position. Anyway, I think generally, you know, 48 points is 48 points. It's still in our own hands. Yeah, because we won that game against Leicester. But you can't say, oh, what about if we didn't win that game against Leicester? What would have happened? You know, because we could, if we didn't win against Leicester, then we might have won it. We could have won against QPR. Like, the situation would have been, how people would be feeling is kind of, I guess, yeah, we wouldn't really know. But I suppose it would have been nicer in terms of, we beat Schumacher. But again, it's all about the points. So frankly, if you told me that particularly when Ian Foster left, that we'd be going into the final two games of the season with the possibility of staying in the Championship still in our own hands, I would have bitten your hand off, you know. So, yeah.
Also, like, while the reversal of those two results would have been a lot easier for me personally, I would not have swapped that Leicester game at Home Park under the lights for winning yesterday. I think that game was so important, just to show the fighting spirit, but I think also just to show, in my opinion, really for the first time this season, that we're capable of beating, like, one of the really, really top sides in the league. Like winning yesterday would have been obviously very nice for all the obvious reasons, but you know, ultimately it would have been a win against a team we've already beaten this season, a team that's kind of there in and around us. We have won, you know, a fair amount of those games, thankfully, over the course of the season, which is why we are in the sort of relatively good position we are in terms of staying up. But, you know, whatever happens between now and the end of the season, just having that experience of beating a team that are probably destined for the Premier League, certainly should never have been at this level, really, at all, was just a fantastic evening. So I think, yeah, again, I do understand the frustrations from yesterday, and obviously a lot of them are valid, but I think that sort of throwing out all of the incredible positivity that came after that and replacing it with just blanket negativity is very short-sighted.
Sam, I think you've already done it, but do we need a ref watch in Joe's absence? I think you've done that. I mean, you've covered that off.
I think we've just about done it. The only other thing I would say, apart from the lack of control of the game in all the major instances, the absolutely shocking decision to book Alfie Devine in the second half. He was so clearly fouled, it wasn't even funny. Whether it was outside of the box or whether inside continued in, I don't know, but it was a blatant, blatant foul. He's clear of the man. He's got no reason to dive whatsoever. I think he was harshly booked at Norwich for diving when it wasn't a dive, and I think that was even more so. Well, I have to agree to differ on that, but I think yesterday's one was even more so, and I think, probably don't need to do much more on ref watch. I think Bobby Mann, like I said earlier, Bobby Mann is one of those refs you shake your head whenever you see he's refereeing. But sort of segueing that into Alfie Devine, any gods want to say, you know, about to blow my own trumpet too much, I did always say, we'll wait for Alfie Devine, because that's clearly going to be a later question.
Let me come in on ref watch quickly, because I don't want to give any Stoke fans who might happen to be watching the sort of impression that we think that he was, you know, a really, really bad one way and that kind of totally swung the game. I thought that was one of the worst refereeing performances I can remember, and I felt that both sides were let down by it at different times. Just astonishing inconsistency in what constituted a foul. Some things that, you know, basically just the same type of tackle would just seemingly elicit a completely diverse range of different decisions from him for no apparent reason, going both ways. At times it felt like he was trying to referee it like a Premier League game, being kind of hypersensitive to any sort of contact whatsoever. At times it felt like he was refereeing a League One game. Obviously we know he has experience in both of those divisions in recent years, so maybe his head's a bit scrambled, but he's a dreadful referee. I think it just has to be said, he's absolutely dreadful. I just wanted to add just quickly that I don't think anyone here is blaming him for our defeat in any way, shape or form, but he had an absolute stinker, probably the worst refereeing performance of the season, and obviously there have been some bad ones, but I think that was in a league of its own.
Yeah, go on then, Sam, run us through your thoughts on Alfie Devine, obviously on loan at Vale last season. Do you think that played a part in his desire?
Well, no, because he was on loan at Vale this season after January.
Whatever.
Not last season. Well. Yeah. maybe. I mean, look, I think there seems to be a bit of a perception of Alfie Devine that he's just an absolute joke player, should never have come on loan to us. But without wanting to blow my own trumpet, what I always said was he is a deep player who was being wasted as a winger. I don't think he is meant to be played as a wide forward in a 3-4-3 at all. He's a deep line CM who can play as like a number 8 or even as a number 6, the deepest CM of all, and do very well in that role. And he was the only player in that second half who had good positive output with the ball. Yes, he made one or two little mistakes, like that time when he shot from about 25 yards when he, you know, really shouldn't have. But yeah, he is a central midfielder and he's a pretty good one. Has he been good for us overall? No, he's not. I know that quite clearly. I'm not saying he's been a successful loan signing, but that's because he's played as a winger when he's clearly not a winger. When he was played as a CM, okay, admittedly the only other game he played as a CM was Bristol City and he got sent off. But, you know, when he has played as a CM, apart from then, when he's dropped into deeper areas, he's played well. And I think he is a good player. And I think yesterday the rest of the team just weren't on his wavelength. And I think there's a reason why he's in the Spurs Academy. It's because for all these little moments of hot-headedness, the decision-making needs a little bit of brushing up, he's got a lot of quality on the ball. Maybe he was fired up with the play Stoke, I don't know, but I think the more tactical reason for his improved performance was that we just played him in his best role. And, you know, Bristol City aside, where he got sent off quite foolishly, generally, if you play him in his best role, he'll have a good game more often than not. So, look, do I think he's coming back here next season? Probably not. But I think if a good League One side or even a Championship side wants to take a chance on him as a CM, I think they've got a good signing, because I mean, he's got a lot of quality about him, and he was the only player in that second half, apart from Cooper, to come out of it with any credit. Aaron, are there any questions coming on Mike Cooper, by the way?
Even if they were, you're going to answer them anyway.
I just want to very quickly say, it doesn't really matter much because we lost the game anyway, but that save from Niall Ennis at 2-0 down is one of the best saves I think I've ever seen him make. You know, it's kind of a shame that that wasn't a match-winning save, because the reflexes on that were incredible. And I think he absolutely deserves all the credit in the world for that save, because if that save had been, you know, been securing a 1-0 win or securing a 0-0 draw, it would be the only thing being talked about. And the level of speed in which he's moved his body to react to that was astonishing. And I think it's up there with one of the best ever saves he's made for us.
Just quickly on Alfie Devine, I think I can see the quality on the ball that he possesses. In general, his whole game, I think he could have done. I think he came to us too soon. Much like Lewis Warrington, but with a lot more quality, he probably could have done with a sort of higher League One loan before he came to us. It's just another one of those. There's a question mark on Ian Foster. Don't want to talk about him too much, but you know, he was meant to he was meant to know about, you know him through the England youth teams. So if he is playing him in his wrong position, then why, well, you know, if he was playing him in his wrong position all this time, why was that? And then why have we persisted on that up until now? But yeah, I mean, I think I don't think he's a great player at this level. And I think he's got some development to do, but I do think that technically he's a decent footballer, but there are plenty more sides to the game than just being quite good technically.
Anything you guys want to add on Stoke before going to the social questions? There's not many.
Have we discussed the burger incident?
Grow up.
I just mean the third goal scored by Valter Bergen. I'm curious, what did you think I meant?
Grow up, John. Grow up. Nobody listening will understand, apart from a couple. And yeah, all right. Don't worry about it.
Well, I would say when it came to that incident, we could have handled it a lot better.
If anybody in this chat has a top knot and wants to talk to Aaron Hocking in the next couple of weeks, I'd think about it before you did.
Yeah.
Can we have a My Argo of Life with the Stoke steward? With like that going to be the next on the agenda?
I think we've moved on from that. We've been told before, on many places, many forums and comments, too many in jokes. Don't think we need any more of those. Moving on to the social questions.
Everyone saw that third goal, though. Everyone saw it. It was part of the game. Well, John, I saw it.
Rob Coles asks, how much easier will it be rebuilding this squad if we go down than if we stay up? Not sure I completely agree. It would be much easier. Would it be the same level? If anything, it would be harder because we've got less budget.
Well, it'll be harder. Well, I think that's a very multifaceted question, if I understand, sir. It'll be harder,
John,
in the
John,
sense
you're
of...
answering without talking.
Oh, was that for John? I thought it was an open forum.
Of course, Sam.
I agree with Sam, because it's kind of a question that, like the answer to the question doesn't necessarily reflect the best outcome, right? Like, yeah, I think in many ways it will be easier to build a competitive squad for League One, but we don't want to be there, so... You know, and that will reflect poorly on the club. I think we're going to have fairly serious whack of budget compared to other recent transfer windows in our history. Probably, well, certainly not still compared to other clubs in the Championship. But you know, if we're selling Whittaker for somewhere in the region of 10 to 15 million pounds that I think are probably fairly conservative estimate. If Hardy were to go, if Gibson were to go, I mean, these are players who are going to fetch more in terms of transfer value than we're used to selling players for in recent seasons. And if you know, even some of that money can be reinvested in the squad, I think we're going to have, you know, a more transfer budget than we've had in previous windows. Now, at this level, we're, you know, if we stay up, we're still going to have to make that money go further than our competitors. We don't have 4 and 5 million pounds to be throwing around on players from, you know, all over the world who are a huge gamble and sometimes come to England and thrive and sometimes don't. You know, if we're in League One, I think we'll probably have a more competitive top end budget than was the case when we got promoted out of that league. And so, which is why one of the reasons why I'm not panicking so much about relegation compared to others. I want to be very, very clear that I don't want it to happen, but I do think we'll be in a strong position in League One if it does come to that. And part of the reason will be that extra budget, as well as having a bit more championship experience. I think either way, this summer is going to be a rebuild, definitely. I think there are players who are going to move on who fans don't want to see move on. I think there are players who we've maybe become attached to emotionally because they've been involved in obviously this incredible recent history that we've had, who maybe just aren't quite good enough for this level and who go back to League One. And we could see a team at the beginning of next season in either league that looks very different to certainly the promotion team under Schumacher, but also the team now. And I think if we do, we're going to have to give that chance. We're going to have a chance. We're going to have to give that time. We're going to have to give those players our full support to try and make them into a legendary Argyle side, right? It's a really positive era ending is always going to be very painful. And I think part of the reason that the second half of the season has turned so toxic at times is that end of era, that kind of change of era has happened, obviously not at a time of our choosing and with Schumacher leaving and obviously in ways that were quite painful and disruptive. But he wasn't ever going to be here forever. A lot of these other players are not going to be here forever. It's a really, really important transfer window to get right. I think if we stay up, you know, whether we do a Rotherham this season or are maybe even in the hunt for the playoffs will all hinge on how wisely we use that extra budget that's going to be coming in. I really honestly could see either of those outcomes or anything in between as being possible. When I say hunt for the playoffs, I don't really necessarily mean we'll be a sort of third, fourth, fifth team, but maybe, you know, a team that is kind of sniffing around the top 10, top half of the table. Obviously, we know at this level, those sorts of teams can be in contention for the playoffs quite deep into the season. So it wouldn't require necessarily a huge, huge improvement to be in that sort of bracket. You know, I think with our resources, that's probably going to be the ceiling, but I think we could do that. I also think we could sell our best players, reinvest the money absolutely horribly and be terrible. And next season be much worse than this. Could also see a world in League One where we buy some of the best players in that division or players who have that potential, or where we kind of, you know, the teams look at us and say, well, you've had this much money coming in for other players. We're going to jack up the value of players who aren't as good and make you pay a bit more through the nose because you can afford it now. So these are all things, these are all challenges we're going to have to navigate, to kind of come back to the initial question. These are all challenges we're going to have to navigate whatever level we're at. Obviously, I really, really hope it's the championship, but yeah, you know, it's tough to build a team for this level at all. It's going to be a tough rebuild, but I'm also kind of excited because I think, yeah, while an era ending can be painful, a new one starting can be exciting sometimes. So we'll see how it goes.
So don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened, John Allsop.
Yes, exactly right.
I think the only point I'd add to that is that it's not just about how we spend the money on rebuilding, which of course John has rightly said could go for or against whatever league we're in. It's also about how much we will get to rebuilding and how many players we sell. Because I think we know 99% Morgan Whittaker is going to be sold this summer no matter what league we're in. But I think there is that other tier of players who I think have had decent seasons, but not, you know, not so amazing that teams would necessarily meet our valuation if we stay up. But if we go down, these players, after having had good seasons, will very much want to play championship football, and we won't be able to demand such a high value for them. I'm talking Hardy, Gibson, Cooper. You know, Cooper's not played a lot of games, but he's been excellent in many of the games he has played. I think that tier of player are very much in the level of, I think most of them will stay for the championship. I know John thinks Hardy's likely to be sold no matter what. I don't quite agree. I think Cooper and Hardy, we probably keep two out of those three, if not all three of them, for the championship. If we go down, I think we probably at best keep one of the three and we lose two of the three, or maybe even all three.
There was a question that I forgot to ask you on Stoke. So this one's comes from at Feed the Spud, and I'm going to ask Sam and John this one, Finn, sorry, because they were there. Booze for Steven Schumacher. What did you make of the reception he received from a loud proportion of the 2,600 in the away end? Either of you can have that.
Totally fair enough. Now, this is with the caveat, I didn't hear anything that tipped into what I would term, you know, unacceptable abuse. And obviously,
we didn't cry, John. We didn't cry.
Did we?
Apparently.
Well, I've not heard a reliable source for that. So, no, look, booing is part and parcel of football. It's a, you know, it's an a mass expression of emotion. It is kind of a pantomime side to it, right? I mean, this is part of the game. It's, I think people get worked up into this kind of moral sort of agony over things like this, as if the way you behave on the terrace has to mirror, you know, every sort of other way you behave in other venues in society. And it doesn't. You know, terrorist culture exists for a reason. Obviously, that's not, again, to excuse things that are beyond the pale. But, you know, booing a former manager is just a very standard thing that football fans do. For me, it doesn't at all like obviate all of the success that he had at the club. I actually really, at this point, personally don't hold much against him. But you know, if you walk out on a club where you've had a great deal of success and cause a bunch, you know, real pain to supporters, and when you do it to a club that, well, obviously we've discussed what big club they are, but you know, it's really difficult. And like the idea he should expect anything, you know, he should expect everyone to just maturely greet that with a warm round of applause is ridiculous. I'm sure he didn't expect that, and I don't think he did cry personally. I mean, I certainly didn't see it. You know, it's just completely part and parcel of the game. It's completely expected, or should be, I think. And I think it's totally fair enough. And I'm sure, you know, and I hope that over time that those kind of raw feelings from this season will diminish. Maybe when we're playing him in three, I mean, I know Stoke will be in the Premier League in three seasons time, according to Sam, under his management. But if we are playing Stoke in three seasons time, I hope he can come back to home park and, you know, maybe get a nice round of applause for what he achieved here. But yeah, you know, the booing doesn't erase what he achieved. It just expresses what the fans feel about the fact that he left in the circumstances in which he did it. And I think it's entirely fair enough.
I take a bit of a different view. Look, booing as he comes out of the tunnel, booing as he comes out of the tunnel, absolutely fair enough. Because aside from anything else, even if you don't feel it's warranted as such, it's you know, we want to make it an unsettling atmosphere for him. We want to get inside his head. But with the long repeated shouts of Shuey is a, I won't say the next word, but it rhymes with the Chancellor of the Exchequer surname. When it was long repeated chants of that, is that how we treat our champions? Is, you know, maybe I'm being soft, and I can already see the comments are going to start rolling in having a go at me, but he had one full season of management with us, and obviously two half seasons either side. That full season of management is going to be probably the best season we've ever had, and possibly the best season we will ever have. 101 points in a mid-table budget has probably never been done and never will be done again in League One level. It was almost on the scale of Leicester winning the league in terms of what an achievement last season was. I don't think that's hyperbolic to say. Is that how we treat our champions?
They haven't won the league yet.
Very, very funny. Leicester winning the Premier League, of course, is what I mean. Is that how we treat someone who was at the helm of one of our best seasons ever? For me, it's not.
But then who walked out midway through a season with his job half done in circumstances that, you know, you in particular have described as being dishonest and very disappointing. I'm actually probably a bit more okay with the circumstances in which he left in terms of the way he interacted with the fans. But like, come on, there's not like a... Yeah, you can really enjoy the, you know, the success and everything, but you don't, if he doesn't owe us loyalty, which he doesn't, then we don't owe him, you know, a nice round of applause for walking out on us halfway through the season when we needed him to stay. I'd also like to caveat this by saying
that Sam has this scenario in his head where Stoke get relegated and Schumacher comes back and he's our manager for next season. It's like, I don't, frankly, on this Schumacher talk, I don't care about him anymore. We lost to him yesterday. We've got a championship season to survive. We need to do that, you know. the Schumacher left us, despite his, I shouldn't actually say that, because I don't know if that's widely known. But I think...
Yeah, please don't. Carry on.
Yes, okay. So Schumacher left when he could have left at the end of the season. Because, you know, all due respect to Stoke, they are a much bigger club than us. However, they are still in a, up until yesterday, a very precarious position in the Championship. So I think that he could have waited for them, and they might not have waited for him, but an opportunity equal to the size of Stoke or bigger could have come. But he chose to leave. So I don't particularly care about him. And as long as the abuse wasn't personal beyond a few poorly chosen words and towards his family, it's just part of football.
Also, what I also don't understand about this, Sam, is that, like, you are very keen on the idea that we shouldn't talk ourselves down as a club, that, you know, we should... you know, aspire to be up there with the, you know, with the best of them. And that, you know, even if we do have a small budget and even if we are a relative kind of David in this league, that we shouldn't act like it. I mean, that was obviously a big point of contention with some of Foster's commentary about us being a relatively small fish who needed to learn to take our medicine. I think, you know, I'm probably more pragmatic and realistic about the size of club I think we are at this level than you are. So I don't really understand how that's consistent with thinking that we should give this bloke who's walked out and caused us an enormous bunch of problems halfway through a season a nice round of applause because he went somewhere for more, you know, for more money and with a bigger transfer budget. I don't see how that's consistent. You know, I know you're not necessarily disagreeing with the booing, but the booing side.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I guess you've kind of answered for me with the last comment. The booing itself, fine, whatever. It's just the depth of the vitriol was, for me, too much. And look, I'm not saying anybody should have been hauled out of the ground. I'm not saying anybody should have been censored or anything like that. But no, that's a serious comment. I'm not, no, a serious comment. I don't think anybody should have been, you know, censored or whatever for doing that. But for me, it wasn't what I wanted to hear for somebody who has given us possibly the best season we've ever had, personally. And it, to me, it did leave a bit of a sour taste in the mouth hearing that. And I just hope that in years to come, if we do stay up this season, whether Stoke do or not, I'm not that bothered. You know, maybe it might give him a bit of humility and make him regret his decision a bit if they go down. But if and when he next does come back to manage us, I hope that it is in a less tense environment where he can get some applause that warrants the job he did over 2 years with us.
He might.
Freudian slip from Sam saying when he next comes to manage us.
To manage against us is what I meant, yes. Sorry.
He might do a Warnock, seeing as he's got a house in the area. He might come down and bring his Stoke side down for pre-season every year.
And just very quickly linked up, very quickly linked to the sort of linked to the manager / Schumacher situation. I saw Rebecca asked in the comments, would you guys see Juice Nippers being a full-time manager next season? He's already said himself that he doesn't want to take it full-time, and frankly, no, because he's got questions of his own to ask around to answer around the appointment of Ian Foster. So, no.
That's the end of another episode of Green and White, brought to you by Argyle Life. Before you go, please make sure you drop us a review on whichever podcast platform you are using, and make sure you follow us on Twitter at Argyle Life 1886. Cheers.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport, powered by fans.